Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Only thing unplugged is Forgotten Seasons.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Forgotten Seasons. This is your host, Dylan Dreyfuss. Today we got Stephon Marbury reliving his second year in the league with the 1998 T-Wolves. When people talk about 90s and 2000s what-ifs in the NBA, the scenario of KG and Marbury sticking together into the 2000s has to be brought up. In 98, at 20 and 21 years old, KG and Marbury lead the Wolves to 45 wins. They meet the 61-win Seattle Sonics in round one and lose in a tight five-game series back when it was only best of five. The following season, Marbury gets traded to New Jersey. KG is in Minnesota for nine more seasons up until 2007. There's a few-year window from 2003 to like 2005 where you could really argue that KG was the best player in the league. In that nine-year window in Minnesota, he has an all-star teammate just twice, 34-year-old Sam Cassell in 04 and Wally Szczerbiak in 2002. Needless to say, but Marbury was the best teammate KG had in Minnesota, and that was at 20 years old, would have only gotten better as time went on. When you look at Marbury's career after he left Minnesota, it's pretty bleak. Makes the playoff twice, 2003 in Phoenix and 2004 in New York, both first-round exits. Towards the back half of this interview, Steph opens up about KG and the whole what-if scenario, speaks pretty honestly, candidly about it. Reminder to drop a rating and a review on the podcast. We're going to get into it now. Forgotten Seasons with Stephon Marbury on the 1998 T-Wolves begins right now. Stephon Marbury, Starbury, you look great. How you feeling today, man?
I'm all right, man. I'm blessed. I can't complain. I'm here. I'm living as we spoke. You know, we're both here. We woke up, so I'm all right. How you doing?
Hey, bro. I mean, I'm sure it's usual for you, but I'm here talking with Stephon Marbury, man. I'm living. This is, this is a dream.
It's all good, baby. Let's do it.
Let's do it. So real quick, hitting on this Point Gods documentary. I've seen it. It's amazing. Streaming on Showtime. Everybody go watch it. Real quick, just tell fans, basketball fans, what they can expect with this documentary and also just the significance of New York Point Gods to the history of, you know, not only NBA, but basketball.
I mean, you just go through the history and you think of Bob Cousy, Lenny Wilkins, Tiny Archibald, so many great ones, Rod Strickland, Kenny Smith, you know, Sham Gladwell, Sebastian Telfair. You know, Pearl Washington, Dave Edwards, so many guards that you can go down the line and the list of players that have played basketball from New York City and the guards who have paved the way in so many different ways and what they've done on the court to be able to give people a visual to remind the basketball lovers of them forever.
All right. So heading back again, Forgotten Seasons, we're talking about 1997-98 Minnesota Timberwolves season, your second year in the league. Brief history of how we led up to this point. You go fourth overall in the 96 draft, get traded to Minnesota for Ray Allen on draft night. And year one, you join KG. You make the playoffs, turning the tide in Minnesota. You get swept by a team of Hall of Famers in Houston. And then year two is kind of where it starts to tick up, especially with you. You average 17-8, youngest player ever to do that at the time, breaking Magic Johnson's record. Since then, kid Luka broke it, but that's pretty good company when you're in the conversation with Magic and Luka. How dope was it just like coming into the league year two and right away you're just killing?
You know, I came in with a different mind frame. And my second year, I put on like 15 pounds. So when I put that extra weight on, but it was, you know, weight from lifting, not, you know, from just getting bulky. When I put that weight on, it just changed my game. And then that's when I really realized that being the strongest guard is super important, because that allows you to go straight down the middle of the court. Not that many players run straight down the middle of the court and score in the NBA. It's hard to do from the top of the key, straight line drive, right or left, to the basket, finish above the rim. So for me, you know, that was important, which is why we get to talk about the point guards.
There we go. Hey, and real quick, so Kenny Smith in the documentary talked about how when he got to the college in the NBA, people always talk about these like welcome to the NBA moments and all this shit, but he was saying that he had his toughest matchups growing up on the blacktop in New York City. So when he got to college in the NBA, you know, it's different, but it's not maybe the same as people that don't come up in New York. Do you feel or share those same thoughts?
100%. My brother, Gaddafi Alonso, I mean, he played for, we grew up playing against each other every day. I mean, and we would play and we'd lose. Whoever lose, sometimes we'd start fighting. And then after that, we started to get some chips and a 50-cent drink. You know what I'm saying? So guys like Gaddafi pushed me to be like a different monster, because, you know, those are where the real fights are. Where you from? Because everybody trying to get out. You know what I'm saying? Everybody trying to be the best to try to make it to the NBA. And, you know, I could relate wholly with what Kenny said, because it's the truth. You know, getting those opportunities growing up, you don't even realize. Like, for me, growing up in Coney Island, people don't realize, because of the wind and we in the buildings, because we're right next to the ocean, when we play basketball, we know where the ball is going to go. So we know when to shoot it off the backboard. And based upon that day, when you out playing that night, you know what kind of day it's going to be, you know how the ball going to go. So you know you're trying to get to the basket those days when you're playing 21 or you're playing knockout or you're playing, you know what I'm saying? Whatever games you're playing, 2-on-2, 1-on-1, 3-on-3, you play all of it, all the way up to 5-on-5, all the way down to 1-on-1 full court. So that right there, it changes. It changes the way how you develop as a player. So all of these different functionalities of playing basketball, you know, you learn how to do this with win factor, and you know, you learn it from playing against guys like Gaddafi, guys like who Kenny Smith spoke about playing against on the blacktop.
Yeah, shooting one is windy, man. I know kids from Coney Island can do it, but there's nothing worse, honestly.
Yeah, nobody. It's hard.
It's hard as hell. So tough to talk about Minnesota without bringing up KG. He's a year older than you. And again, you know, 21 years old you guys are, but you're killing it. He averages 20-10-4, block and a steal. You know, when you think about KG at this time, your first few years in the league, do you have like one word or one story that just flashes to your mind first?
Kev is probably one of the hardest workers and focused and dedicated, committed basketball players I know, from seeing it from a young age. Like, Kev was stretching for 30, 40 minutes before people was even thinking about stretching, like our age. I mean, I stretch, but like how he stretched. He wake up, stretch. He go to sleep, he stretch. You know, so I knew his commitment and his love to basketball. So for me, I knew Kev would be one of the best players to ever play. It wasn't, that was easy to know, to see that. Mm-hmm. I mean, my brothers used to be like, yo, Kev knows how my brothers feel about him. He know how I feel about him. And to know Kev as a basketball player, nobody worked like him. I mean, he's a dog. when it comes to like getting certain things down, staying after practice, before practice. So it's great to have played with a guy like that.
Obviously, he talks shit to the opposing team. So he talks shit to his own teammates.
Kev would get, it's like something inside his brain that switch. It's a switch that goes off whenever he wanted to go off. You know what I'm saying? And when it go off, it's like he like blacks out and he's just in a space. It's like he's in a zone space that only the people that can vibrate with him, that's there with him, can do that. He grabbed me one time by my ears because he was so hyped. And he put scars all up neck and my back of my ears. And I felt it. You know when you get swiped, when you get cut, you like, oh, that's going to burn. That's going to hurt. And then that's going to bleed. And then it's bleeding. I already knew it was all raw. I had white. But I know that that's just his energy and his passion that he can't control. So, you know, for me to be able to, I had connection and energy with that type of human being from doing something that we love to do was pretty dope and memorable. It's stuff that you'll never forget. And KG is, I mean, I'm not shocked at anything that they say about him as a hooper. That's who he is. And the cursing and the yelling and all that, I don't think that's Kev. That's just who he is.
Hey, that's a big ass hand coming down on you too. He probably just doesn't even realize his own size.
That's Kev.
So kind of zooming out right now, like thinking about the state of the league when you walked in, obviously 97-98, this is the Bulls' last dance. We got something brewing in LA with Shaq and Kobe. How do you like best paint the picture of the league that you walked into?
It was ready to go from one space to another space when guys like Allen Iverson and myself came. It was time for a shift in the culture. The NBA is an entertainment platform that everyone gets to utilize.
And like this.
Yeah, exactly. So we can have these conversations and converse about all of the different things that, you know, have gone on. But at the end of the day, fans love who they love and they support who they support. And, you know, they hope for the best for their team, for that team to be successful based upon the people that they hire, the decisions that they make. And then they spend money to go see that team, you know, whichever team is doing that. For the fans to be able to have that experience and for, you know, the fans to be able to root and cheer for that team, for them to possibly win, that's great. It's all entertainment. So everybody wins and everybody eats in it. So I have different perspective, you know, which is okay. You know, it's okay for me to see it a one way and for you to see it another way.
Hey, that's how it should be. I know like Stack Jack talked about just the importance of you and AI coming into the league and how, you know, you were a little bit more outspoken and rubbed some people in the league office the wrong way. When did that start for you? Like, when did you start butting heads with the David Sterns of the world? Was it right away? Did it take a few years? Was it when you left Minnesota? When did that sort of just start to, when did that friction start to happen and why?
I don't think it was like butting heads. I think it was more of, I didn't do what I was told to do. And I think it's people misunderstand, you know, butting heads and doing something that you are told to do. But it's okay, you know, because of what went on in the past has shaped and molded what's happening now. You know what I'm saying? So clearly, you know, you can't go to a place where there's a billion plus people and, you know, play basketball and, you know, they do things like build monuments of you. And that stuff, it doesn't normally happen like that. You know, it doesn't just all of a sudden turn around. As a human being, people can't question that because I'm not perfect. I make mistakes, but it's all positive. It's all love. So it's not a button head. And I think people should recognize the difference in time. As time as time takes its place in its course, for some people, they should recognize within their time frame that now they can see that, okay, so this guy evolved to something else. It's not just about basketball, and it's bigger than basketball. So, you know, for me, I got nothing but respect for the NBA and for how things are going right now. I respect that.
Well, I think undeniably, and people say, you know, you've paved a path for people today, players today. You know, you look at the league fits of the world and players being able to freely express yourself. Do you have a sense of pride in looking at the league now and, you know, thinking back 20 years ago, maybe the tribulations that people like you and AI had to go through to allow players to be themselves? Do you feel pride from that? Because I think you should.
I mean, I lived in my moment when I was playing basketball and I was speaking about what was going on with me and what was happening with me, because everyone's situation is completely different. But there are similarities and certain things that can happen with players, with coaches, with whoever. You know, it's all possible for the same thing to happen all over again with the player. But I think for me, I just now just look at it and say I said what I said because that's how I felt and that's what the truth was. And I can say it right now and I don't have to remember what I said because I know what happened. I don't got to change I'm not going to change a story from something that happened in my moment in my life.
100%. 100%. So circling back kind of your first few years in the league, you mentioned Gary Payton as a guy that kind of showed you what was good. As you were trying to establish yourself, who were the guys that you kind of circled on the calendar trying to bring it to, and who were the guys that showed you what, you know, an NBA star point guard was like?
I never circled anybody because every night you knew you was somebody. You knew it. I mean, there's no night off in the NBA. If those off that guy took off, that other guy was on.
Talk about the West, even the West at that time. There's five teams that have 56 or more wins. You got Utah, you got Seattle, you got San Antonio, kind of war zone.
I mean, you're playing against every night. You're hooping. I mean, that's what is the best part about playing in the NBA. You get the hoop, and you get to go against all of the top players all the time. Because you'll have a guy who's a backup, and he's getting his opportunity. You go in the game thinking, oh, he wasn't on a scouting report. But he's on a scouting report, but you didn't pay attention. And he got 10 points at halftime and about 5 assists. He on pace for a 20-10 night. That's a lot of points from one person from assists and points. Like, that's what we do. We put 36 up a night, 20-8.
Every night. You know,
and I got 36 points on the board, and some threes can go into that. We not even counting those points. That's like could be 40-something points every night that you paying me for. Like, that's why my stock is my stock. Come on, man. The business, man. Basketball business. But you get it. You know what I'm saying? So I think for the most part, you know, it has to be viewed and be looked at like that.
Mm-hmm. Going into the playoffs, you win 45 games, 7th seed. You mentioned Gary Payton and Vin Baker. What memories do you have of that series? You have them up 2-1 at home. Could have closed them out. It's a team that's been there before. You know, they were in the finals a few years back. What do you remember from that series?
Exactly what they did. They used their smarts, their savviness of playing in the finals, not only playing in the finals, but experienced players who have been there before, who had a different type of desire because they lost. So now they're not about to let these two little young punks come in and try to and knock them out. But, you know, after that, I was like, oh, I got to get way stronger. Like, I need to be, like, way stronger to do what I want to do on the court because I can't do what I was doing in college. Mm-hmm. And high school can't do that like that in the NBA. And when you got to be honest with yourself. So right away, I went to go pump that iron.
Mm-hmm.
After that was
it's the over.
Cure.
Give me one Gary Payton soundbite, if you remember.
GP, there is no one. there is no one soundbite for GP.
Nonstop.
That's what he do. That's part of the tenacity that he brings to the defensive basketball game. He brings that talk. So he brings that to the table with that. And whenever you play against a guy like that, you have to make sure that the first thing you do is you never listen to that. Because if you listen to that, it becomes a distraction. And that's part of it. You just got to hoop and just block out whatever he says because he say things to try to get you to say something on the court. Off the court, it's great. I love that. That's great to go and lit box that time. But on the court, you got to just hoop against GP. Smart. Knows his craft.
So you think the worst thing that you can do is talk back to him?
Basically, there's no point. That's what he do. He do that while he's playing. He's talking the whole time on the court.
It's like, is Kev talking at that point, or is he listening?
Yeah. No. Kev talking too, but he ain't really talking to him. Like, Kev started talking when he got to Boston. But he talked in Minnesota from what I saw. But in Boston, he talked on the court to the point where you're like, he's directing everybody so everybody can be in the right position. Mm-hmm. So that, because he knows he's the last line of defense. So he's communicating, like being on the battlefield and where guys should be, get up on pick and roll, show, weak side. Like you hearing that, because Kev loves basketball. So, and he loved winning, he hate losing. So being that he has all of these different factors, that's what made him, like, when he talked. And then, you know, the talking nonsense, talking smack stuff, that's normal. But KG, they didn't really do that when we were playing. But when he got older, he did.
Maybe he's listening to Gary Payton and remembering some of the stuff he says to use for later.
Maybe.
So I know we only got a few minutes left coming out of this season. You guys lose 3-2 in the first round, and then, you know, a few weeks into the next season, you're out. You know, it's been said before, you've talked about why you left Minnesota, you know, seemed to be like a cultural fit. You just weren't happy there. And I think you mentioned our perspective on the game is much different from yours. Was there like a sense of relief just leaving there and going back to New Jersey where it's closer to home?
I was happy playing basketball there. I just didn't want to spend 7 years of my life living in 40 below, you know, weather with snow all the time. That's not something that I wanted to commit myself to. I love basketball, but it just came down to, it wasn't just about basketball. It was about me living and how I felt. But, you know, so it wasn't, I had, the fans were great, playing ball there. All of it was amazing. It was really that part. And, you know, but people are still bitter about it.
Because if you look at KG's career, bro, like he stayed in Minnesota for how he stayed probably for a little bit too long. And who was the best teammate that he had after you? There's none, bro. I know it's unfair for anybody outside of the situation to look at you and say you should have done this. But as basketball fans, the thought of you and KG playing together for all that time, like, that rewrites the history of the game 100%.
Yo, I get this question.
I know. I'm sorry.
It's all good.
It's just, it's got to say something that, 25 years later, we're still fucking talking about it.
You saying that with conviction?
It's true, bro.
I feel you. You know, and you know, it's to the point where people have made me feel like, well, okay, let me really jog my memory back and think like, how would it have really been? And I'm like, yeah, me and Kev would have basically been terrorizing the league with doing just pick and roll, side pick and roll, and high pick and roll with shooters in the corner. Nobody would be able to move. It would be like Stockton and Malone on steroids.
Say that.
Like, oh my God. People, they'd be so mad at me.
But no regret at all on your part.
It's not that I have regret about it. It's not, because I honestly feel like if all of what didn't happen, we wouldn't be right here talking and having such an amazing conversation right now talking, because we vibing. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was designed the way how it was designed. What's for me is for me. What's for you is for you. What God got for you, God got for you. What God got for me, got for me. And, you know, I'm a firm believer. I let God direct all my decisions when I'm making something that's concerning for my future and my family. You know what I'm saying? Because this is how, you know, I take care of my family. You know, so for me, I wanted to make sure that I was happy. That's important. You can't play basketball feeling like that. It's hard. It's stressful enough, and all of what you have to do to prepare yourself to play basketball. You know what I'm saying? It's hard within itself, but then to do it with another burden of stress, it's not comfortable, and that's not something you should grow. Being comfortable in an uncomfortable situation. You shouldn't have to do that. And I didn't want to do that for myself. I know myself, so it was a decision.
Hey, man, I think at the end of the day, who the hell are we to tell you what is the right decision? And you know that NBA fans live in this fantasy land.
It's all love. It's all love. I'm there too. I live there too. It's all good. That's why, you know, it's to the point now, it makes me feel good sometimes to hear people talk about it 25 years later. You know,
it should, like, bro. Wow. It should.
I know it's like it's a deep thing, and that it shows what energy they saw on the court during that time. And I respect it. I respect it.
It was mean fucking energy, bro. in the best way. That's why we're still talking about it.
I feel you.
All right, Steph, man. Again, a privilege to talk to you, bro. I'm sorry to ask you the same question that every interview asks you, but I mean, you know where it's coming from.
It's different coming from you, so it's all good. You come from a different place.
I appreciate it, man. Again, Point God, Showtime, watch it. Steph, man, any last words to send the listeners off to?
Just as my older brother Eric say, be good and don't hurt nobody.
There we go. Beautiful.
Peace.
All right, bro. Really appreciate it.
That is a wrap for this week's interview. Stephon Marbury on the 1998 T-Wolves. This is your host, Dylan Dreyfus. We will be back next Tuesday with a fresh episode. Reminder, drop a rating and a review on the podcast. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter. Follow Showtime Basketball @ Show Basketball for more. Catch you next Tuesday. Until then, peace.